Welcome back to another episode of M&A Access. My name is Ekaterina, and today we are here at the Winter Conference in Charleston, and joining me, Maureen Berkner. Did I pronounce her name correctly?
You did, yeah.
Okay, do you prefer to go by Maureen or Mo?
How about you use both?
Okay, I will try. I actually like Mo a little more because
it's friendly.
Yeah, it's cute. So Mo, share a little bit about yourself on this podcast. This is your first time on our podcast, correct?
Correct.
So congratulations. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Yeah, we are very glad to have you, especially me. I was excited all day about our interview because we come from the same sphere communications. So a little spoiler about you. Share a little bit about your background and a little bit about the company that you work for.
You bet. So my work has always been centered around how do you unleash human potential at work? How do you get the most out of individuals? How can they show up to work, loving what they do and doing great work? Intersect that with I'm always interested in utility. So what works? What are the numbers? What are the data? Theory doesn't really change behavior. It doesn't help the bottom line. It doesn't really help people have a better workplace experience. So the arc of my career has been how do we create solutions that have high utility, that allow work for everybody to deliver business results. The latest form of that is C2IQ. So I founded C2IQ about 6 months ago. Well, that's when we came to market. And it is really making the human risk of change and integration as measurable as the financial risk. Mm-hmm. So I think people often think of this as warm and fuzzy, and it's anything but. And here's the data that can tell you where an integration might fail, where you might have spikes in turnover, so you can proactively do something about it.
Mm-hmm. So you're like a psychologist part of the deal because you deal with people and human interactions and like health of human relationships.
Yes.
So why that?
Oh my gosh, because it's the messy, complicated part of integrations, of acquisitions. You can model just about everything else, right? You have your pro forma, you've got your financials, you have those targets. It's humans mm-hmm. that actually have to do the work of it. And there is an unpredictability of that. Humans are fascinating. They're interesting. And so I like that challenge.
Mm-hmm. So what... Also, you interviewed over 1,000 people.
I have.
That is very impressive.
Yes.
I am jealous as somebody who is, I would say, I started my journalistic career about 6 or 7 years ago. So I have interviewed over 100 people, but
yes.
Not 1,000. Yeah. I just applaud to you. That's a lot of people.
Well, you know, it's fun. It's interesting. It's a way to really get to know how people think. And quite frankly, I love learning. Mm-hmm. And so you learn a ton as you're interviewing people. Mm-hmm. So it's made me better at what I do, mm-hmm. And kept my curiosity bug kind of fed.
Mm-hmm. What kind of skills do you need to have to work as what you do on a communication side?
Yeah, it's interesting because we really are the intersection of data and human behavior. Mm-hmm. And so I think for that, I always say I'm a curious problem solver. So I saw that there were what was happening in terms of the number of deals that fail. They fail to reach their full potential, right? There's the value degrades. There can be a flat out failures. And then looking at what was underneath that, and it was really human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And then saying, well, what? What about that isn't working? Because there are lots of really great culture assessments. There are pulse surveys. There are different things that can tell you. I call that rear view mirror data. That's already happened.
Mm-hmm.
You can look at your turnover data. What's predictive data? And so really looking at, again, that curious problem solving. Okay, these integrations aren't working because of humans. What piece? What discrete skills are leading to that? Did a bunch of research. I wonk out on neuroscience all the time and really came to understand that change resilience and human connection skills are critical and they're measurable. And the good news is if you find out that those are low, they can also be learned.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's like building muscles. And so I think there is this, for me, it has been about being very curious,
mm-hmm.
And always kind of eyes on the prize in terms of what are we trying to do? Make work for everybody so that both they're happy, right, and doing their best work, and it's leading to bottom line business results. So how do we keep solving for that? And what's the data behind that? And how do we keep refining it?
Yes, and you have to be very analytical and just like see every detail about everyone. I feel like that's exhausting, though.
You know what's interesting to me is everyone on my team and my family would laugh if you said analytical.
Really?
Not something that's usually used to describe me. And I think I am always about, because it is a marrying of the big picture and those details.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not naturally the figures, the numbers. I am about results.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think when you've been at it long enough, you start to see the patterns,
mm-hmm.
And again, where the gaps are and what we're trying to solve for. And it was actually surprising to me as we started to really dig in that there was not an assessment that was measuring these finite skills that are absolutely fundamentally critical to any sort of disruptive change, integrations being one of them.
Mm-hmm. So from those thousands, how many people have
it's
you
It's just over 1,000.
Just
yeah.
over 1,000. Okay. Leaders that you interviewed about change in culture, what patterns have you seen repeating constantly?
Underinvestment, thinking it's soft, and then those that get it really getting it, and understanding that it really is, there are some fundamental things about kind of both head and heart and connecting those to how do I lead, right? I have to lead with my head. I have to lead with the business results, but I also have to lead with my heart in terms of really understanding these are human beings.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They bleed, they cry, they are excited when they spike the ball, you know, all
mm-hmm.
of those things. And you can't ignore that.
Yeah.
I mean, it is messy and complex and hard, and it would be much easier if it were all just spreadsheets.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I was going to say that human side of things, everyone is so different. How do you deal with that stress? Because it's like working in a customer service with angry clients or with, you know, kind clients that would make your day better. Like, but when it comes to angry ones, how do you deal with that stress that is left at the end of the day or like a bad aftertaste in your mouth?
I think it's interesting because to me, it's about giving people agency. So for them to understand, where are my skill gaps? What are the things that I need to work on? How can you be supported in learning the things that you need to learn to do your job better? And sometimes those are the direct skills for the job, right? I need to learn this part of AI so that I can implement that, so that we can, you know, drive time out of things. And I need to learn problem-solving confidence skills, right?
Mm-hmm.
I need to not be able to quit on problem-solving confidence. That's one of the skills that C2IQ measures that is very important for change resilience. So I think it is, yes, humans can be difficult and they can be, but we all really want the same thing, right? We want to feel like we matter. We want to feel like we're heard, right? And and if I can do that as a leader, and if I can start with the data, so I'm not guessing and I'm not kind of peanut butter spreading, like here are the things that everybody needs that are the same. It isn't,
mm-hmm.
right? I might have great problem solving confidence skills, but I may be really low on adaptability skills. I need something different,
mm-hmm.
right? Than you need. And the upskilling that you need, because people really want also to be thinking that they're learning and growing in their career.
Mm-hmm. Can you share a story of maybe some deal or something memorable that has happened after the deal that just like went terribly wrong?
Yeah, that's one of my favorite. That is one of my favorite questions, actually. It's one that I ask on my podcast. Well done.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. There was an integration that was happening. It was a manufacturing company. This is way back in my career. when I was actually working for somebody else. That's how long that's how long ago it was. And you couldn't have had two different cultures. It was a printing company. One was, the headquarters were up, and this is in the U.S., headquarters were up in the north. The company that they had acquired was in the south. So just cultural differences that way. The leadership team from the north came in, kind of, you know, brought down the hammer. Here's how we do things. They weren't doing a lot of listening. They weren't, right? There was no integration plan. It's just, we bought this, like, run the presses, go. Here's how we do things. Mm-hmm. It was going so poorly that there were a couple of us that were sent down, kind of be olive branch employees. They had pulled everybody out for about 3 to 4 months because it was almost coming to blows. When I arrived, there were people that in their tool chests out on the production floor had stickers printed that said, "We don't give a damn how you do it up north." Right? It had gone really poorly. And what needed to happen at that point was a lot of listening. You actually do have good ideas. How can we implement those? Right? Here's some things that have made our lives easier. Here's how we're getting the production numbers, because everybody wanted the production numbers. Here's how we're getting the great production numbers. How can we use that here? Right? So it was an entirely different approach about what to keep, what to integrate, what to change, how some of the practices from the company that was the acquirer could be used, and how the people that were acquired some things. So again, it had gotten very ugly, and there had to be a pause, and everybody had to check their egos at the door and realize what we're trying to do here is we're all trying to achieve the same thing, right? We're trying to have excellent business results. Now how can we get there together?
I was going to say, at the end of the day, everybody still gets paid. At the end of the day, you're still doing your job. Nobody's firing you, you know. It's just two companies who are now together, yeah. You know, and you have to work with those people. Is it more of an ego thing, or is it just like human nature that doesn't like the change?
I think it's actually a couple of things. So I think that there is, and this is where I will get into a little bit of neuroscience. I'm sorry, I can't help myself. We see change neurologically as a threat.
Interesting.
Because there's a whole lot about how we preserve oxygen for our brain. We stay in habit most of the time. Change throws us out of habit. So we immediately go into amygdala hijack. I like to say change makes us real dumb. So there's that piece that's happening, right? So neurologically, we don't like change. We try and get back to a state of habit as quickly as we can. There is also a skills gap. So when I think about what that skills gap was in terms of for change resilience and human connection that are really critical for transformative, high-stakes change, disruptive change, when I think about that integration that had gone wrong, you had a set of leaders that had very low empathy and listening skills. You had another set of leaders that had very low adaptability skills. Mm-hmm. And so upskilling those, making them better at those things, right, would have made that deal go much more smoothly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And another thing, too, that when you said, you know, we consider change as a threat right away, I think it's kind of related to what they say, getting out of your comfort zone.
Yes. Right. We hate that. We spend about half our life in habit loops. Mm-hmm. And we do that again because we're preserving the oxygen for our brain, because although it takes a very small amount of our body mass, mm-hmm. it takes the lion's share of our oxygen. Mm-hmm. And we have a finite amount of energy in a day. If I'm having to think about this new process, if I'm having to think about what my benefits might be, if I'm having to think about who my boss is, all of those are taking up oxygen, mm-hmm. right? And so my body actually goes into this panic mode.
Yeah, stress mode. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when you just start to work on a new deal with someone, what are the earliest warning signs that an integration is struggling from?
Well, I think it's interesting. For us, we look to the data, so we can tell you, right? We're not the boots on the ground that are doing the integration. What we are doing is supplying the data. So we can say, we can predictively say, you're probably going to see, depending on where there are low skill areas, you might be seeing, I'm going to kick it up. I don't want to take the risk. So I'm just going to keep asking somebody, well, you know, what would you do? There might be stalling. There might be seeing things through to a certain point and then quitting, right? There's just a whole set of business results that can come. So for us, it is saying, here's your data. Here's some things that might happen. Now, take care of it, mm-hmm. right? Having the plan is one thing. People having the capacity and the skills to execute on their plan is quite another.
Yeah. And you also worked with leaders navigating disruption. What do the best ones do differently when uncertainty hits?
Mm. Yeah, I think that is, the two things, a lot of listening, right, to really understand what's going wrong and what is uncertain, even just defining that. Mm-hmm. And then what's the plan forward? So what's the plan and what data can you collect? There's a certain amount that intuition can get you through and having done it before, but a lot of times those assumptions are wrong. Mm-hmm. So the sit back, the what's the plan, what are the markers, what's the data to create kind of, because there's certainty in chaos, right? There are very predictable things that are going to happen during change. And so it is, where are we in that? What's my responsibility? What do I need to listen to? Who do I need to learn from? What data do we need to collect? I think there is the power in the pause.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of intuition, how often do you rely on it when it comes to your job?
Well, I'm a founder, right? And I'm kind of an entrepreneur's entrepreneur. And so there's... what's my mix? I think it depends on where I am in the startup process. I've started several businesses. Intuition is often the thing that leads me to open the door in the first place.
Mm, okay.
Right? There's something here. And then listening to some things. I also have an excellent board that helps check me on my intuition, because that's that you brought up the analytical part earlier and I laughed about it. I am a jump first and see if I have a parachute later kind of person. and so intuition 9 times out of 10 serves me well. But I also like to then say, here was my intuition. Now let's get some facts.
Mm-hmm. How do leaders balance speed and empathy during M&A integration?
I don't think that those are mutually exclusive. I think that is, if I could, debunk that myth that we're going fast so we can't be empathetic, I think that is absolute bunk. That is a false choice.
Huh.
I think that you can have speed and empathy. You can be, hey, we're moving fast. Change is hard. Here are some of the things that are happening. Here are some of the skills that you need to lean into. I hear you. We're going to keep moving. Here are the things that I think that you can do, right? You can be messaging along the way. It's like taking a run and having a conversation. You can do both at the same time.
Mm-hmm. But isn't that stressful, though?
I think it's far more stressful to go fast and have to clean up the mess.
Good
right?
point.
Right? Like, I often say, choose your hard.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So choose your hard. Do you want to figure out how to be good at speed and empathy? Or do you want to figure out how to be good at speed and cleaning up the train wreck that is, when you look at a 70% failure rate, right, we're saying only 30% are successful. Where do you choose your heart?
Mm-hmm. What mistakes do executives commonly make during the M&A process?
Yeah, seeing this human side is soft and not mm-hmm. measurable, right? So the amount of... Think about spending the amount of time in due diligence, in creating the integration plan, and how often the human side is seen as an afterthought, mm-hmm. 9 times out of 10. Mm-hmm. And so the mistake is thinking about that, again, when you either have a mess to clean up, you're seeing you just had key talent leave, you've seen productivity go down, integration times are slowing, all of those things that happen, if you are thinking about and measuring, getting some data, and then investing in the human beings that actually have to execute mm-hmm. on your plan, you can go faster, you can be more successful. So ignore at your peril.
Mm-hmm. So a little bit on the like a psychological portion of the deal making, how often do people wear masks? Not physically. I'm talking about performance, you know. Maybe you have a story regarding that when you were helping someone who you thought is a lot more powerful or vice versa, you know, a lot yeah. more helpless, and they just became a very strong person in front of you.
I think it's really interesting. You get to see folks' true nature under pressure.
Yeah.
Right? You get to
pressure
see.
Makes
so.
Diamonds.
Yeah. Yeah. Or dust.
That is true, too.
I think that there is, you know, you get to experience people at the highs and the lows. For most people that have just sold their business, it's for many people, it's the biggest transaction they'll ever go through in their life. So there's this euphoria. You have the majority of people who didn't choose this change.
Mm-hmm.
But they're the ones that actually have to execute. And so I do think that there is, you get to see the good, the bad, the ugly. You get to see the surprise stars that, you know, you didn't expect mm-hmm. To see, and they raise their hand and they really step up to the moment. And again, that was a piece of developing C2IQ. So for some of that, it's very predictable.
Mm-hmm. Do you work with international businesses at all?
Not yet. We did, again, not my first rodeo, so we have in the past. We're really, when you're doing a validated skills assessment, right, there's the science behind that, making sure we're fairly certain that we're going to have validity cross-culturally because we built in some cross-cultural competence into the skills model, and we're staying with the U.S. focus to start. Mm-hmm. Knowing we're actually already getting pulled internationally, and then we're going to look at the data to see if the validity holds.
What countries, if you don't mind asking?
Slovenia to start.
Slovenia! Yes. That's kind of random.
I know.
Honestly.
We certify partners, mm-hmm. And one of our certified partners is originally from Slovenia.
That's awesome. I'm originally from Russia, which is why I was so excited to hear that I'm also a Slavic country.
You're like, wait?
Yes, yeah. So when it comes to like international, have you thought about what your approach would be? Because, you know, two companies who, number one, have different people, different cultures,
yes.
different languages, and completely different size of the planet.
Yes, yeah.
How do you match them?
I think what's interesting about that, again, I know to stay in my lane, right? That's going to be somebody else's lane. There are people that do great integration advisory that are those cross-cultural. We can give them the data, right, that helps them with that integration, but I'm not touching it.
How do you choose the right people?
In terms of our certified partners? Yeah, we really look at people who are looking at the messy side of integration.
Mm-hmm.
And actually what we're coming to find is that the people that are looking at that from a sell side too. Mm. So preparing so that an organization, right, that the people taking the assessment don't necessarily know that there is a deal in the works. What they do know is that they've just taken this assessment and now they've got some really critical career advice
mm-hmm.
On skills that they need to upskill to get better.
Mm-hmm.
So who are the people that are truly taking a holistic look at a deal? They're not just looking at the financials. They are looking at the human side. They're great partners because they're probably already doing some cultural audits. They might be doing things like that. They're certainly looking at the talent bench. We're just giving them a additional layer of diagnostic data in terms of what can go right, what can go wrong, and to predict and give them information about how the integration can go better. Mm-hmm. Those are the folks that we partner with because they're already thinking about the humans in the loop.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you need any help when it comes to your Slovenian future business partners, let me know. I don't speak Slovenian language, but I come from the same culture, same yep. mentality. We're pretty straightforward people, so I'll do my best to help you.
I love it. Thank you.
So you also have a podcast.
I do.
Just one or two?
One right now.
Okay, one right now. Right now.
We'll see.
Okay, we'll see. It's called Make or Break. Is that correct?
It is.
Yes. So where can people find it and listen to it and check it out?
For sure. So anywhere you get your podcast. And we are on YouTube as well because we are doing video interviews much like this. Mm-hmm. So Make or Break, and our tagline is conversations at the intersection of disruption and people. Mm-hmm. And the idea is anybody that's on, and again, I use these podcasts because I just love to learn. Mm-hmm. And so what are the things that are working? What are the train wrecks? What data and metrics do people rely on? What systems when people are in the midst of disruptive change? And it's fun, right? We've got people that are sharing just such a wide range of what's working, what's not. The train wrecks are fun.
Have you ever thought about starting a podcast about something completely different, not related to your career?
Yeah, for sure. I think it'd be a blast.
What would it be about?
It would be incredibly niche, and it would be around people's best live music experiences, right? Best concert they ever saw, what made it great, where was it, who were they with?
That's amazing.
If you want to take people down memory lane, and they start to talk about so many people, it was one of their first concerts. You know, they were like, I was 14 and I snuck out and, you know, went
and saw. Oh my gosh. That would be so much fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
You get to hear wild stories of that too.
Yeah.
It's a great, by the way, it's
now
a great.
Now you got me thinking about.
Great cocktail conversation.
The best concert I've ever been on. Wow. I can't even think. I don't think I've been to too many concerts quite yet in my life, but I would say the best one was probably in Dallas when I went to see The Weeknd. What about you?
Okay, there we go. I'm going to date myself with this, and it was the mix of everything, but I saw Cheap Trick at a county fair in Wisconsin in the early 80s.
Okay. Okay, so you are a very busy businesswoman. How do you balance your career, your business, and also podcasting? How does that lean into your lifestyle?
It fills my cup. So as I said, I'm interviewing interesting people that are doing good work. It helps me to learn, to grow, to stay curious, to stay on top of things that are happening, and to be able to share that information, because yeah, I podcast, but I podcast so that people can learn, right? So that there's a whole community of people that are getting better at what they're doing. So if it were draining, and if I didn't have a great team, like I get to do this and then I hand it off and the editing and the producing and the posting and all of that happens. So to me, I get the best. One of the most fun things about what I do.
Mm-hmm. Who's been your favorite guest so far?
Oof. I mean, that's like, who's your favorite kid?
That is true. That is very true.
I can't
true.
Because different interviews, different things. I've had panels. I've had kind of in the moment at events. Mm-hmm. I've had very produced. I've had some people that I would call were aspirational asks. Mm-hmm. That then you just, as is always, just interesting conversation. Mm-hmm. So they a bit blend together. It's mm-hmm. like asking your favorite kid.
Yes, that is true. Okay, then what about somebody who left you surprised about the information or insights they have shared?
Mm-hmm. I interviewed a woman who, Pat Waters, who was brought into multiple organizations to be their chief human resource officer. And just hearing her backstory was surprising and kind of what led her to her career.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What kind of person, I guess, and in what career you have to be on your podcast? For those who are listening, maybe interested in getting in touch with you and being on your podcast, how do they do it and what kind of profession they have to have in order to be qualified.
Yeah. To me, it is folks that have something to offer the community in terms of centering humans during disruptive change. So what are the... You've got tools, you've got metrics, you have stories that I always say I want people to leave with kind of an aha and something they can do.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to have been in the trenches. I'm not real big on theory, right? In practice, what are you doing that is centering humans at a very, very difficult time to make it easier for them and to produce business results,
mm-hmm.
right? It has to be the both.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's funny because there, you know, often people are like, "Oh, you're on the soft side of things." I'm like, absolutely not, not even close.
You work with people. How is that soft?
Yeah, and it's very, very. I think that's the other thing is, I think one of the reasons people have said that this is the soft side of things is they haven't been able to measure it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we're getting a lot better at measurement. I know certainly with C2IQ, we're measuring something that hasn't been measured before. I think there's some really interesting culture audits, again, pulse surveys. I think the data side of things is catching up. So people are really, I'm hoping that that misrepresentation of this as soft is soon to be something of the future.
Mm-hmm. And before we wrap this up, once again, how can people get in touch with you regarding podcast or your services?
Yeah. I love wonking out with people on all things that are about disruptive change. People, I'm on LinkedIn is a great way to connect because I'd love to hear people's thoughts and kind of what they're putting out there as well. And then c2iq.io is our website. And yeah, reach out.
Maureen, thank you so much. Or, sorry, Mo, actually. I told you I'm going to call you Mo from now on. Thank you so much for visiting us on M&A Access today. We hope to talk to you again soon because this was delightful.
This was so fun.
I absolutely enjoyed our conversation.
I did too. And I really appreciate keep it up. You're at 100 plus and you are a great interviewer. So.
Thank you so much. That means a lot to me. Trust me.